So let's get started then. Let's see, I like to be able to see people, so I'm going to move my talk to the side here. And today, as I said, we're doing the last talk on energy, or virya, as it is called in Pali. It's actually the fifth of the 10 perfections that we're going to focus on for the year. And the aspect that I'm going to focus on is investigating habit patterns that block or sap the wholehearted use of our energy resources. And also look at some ways to replenish energy and nourish joy and effort. A number of teachers this month have mentioned the phrase joyful effort. I kept an energy journal this month, and I noticed too many phrases in my journal, like all work and no play, no space for me in this day, too much, no downtime. That isn't the only thing I wrote, but I noticed those phrases and I was curious about this. I'm retired. I live alone with my cat. How much of this attitude comes from outside conditions and how much from conditions inside me? Well, lucky for us investigating energy is one of the energizing factors of the seven factors of enlightenment, along with rapture or joy and energy itself. So, actually, no, the third one is mindfulness. It seems like this investigation is pointing in the right direction. Joyful effort. At first, I thought my attitude could be explained by the fact that this month was unusually busy for me, and I had quite a few extra appointments and some extra responsibilities. I also had a cold with a scratchy sore throat for a couple of weeks, and I was reading Norman Fisher's chapter on joyful effort in the book that we have on our reading list. Norman Fisher's come to Sims many times and given talks. He's a Zen teacher. He described how he sometimes had to teach long retreats while he was sick, in which he would give daily talks and have many, many interviews with practitioners each day. And he said there's a way to practice joyful effort even when you're sick. So that kind of was not a good excuse for me. So, in reflecting on the tendency towards stress and overwhelm that I was noticing in my journal, I thought I'd keep asking the questions. What is the quality of my energy in this moment? Really pay attention to what my energy was like. And also ask what is the underlying attitude supporting or interfering with my energy in the moment, to the degree that I could figure it out. This meant that I needed to pay attention to my body and my mind, and I needed to apply these questions in formal sitting and in my daily activities. So I was thinking a lot about the link between effort and energy, and about what happens when the weight of stress and overwhelm press down. I have aspirations that motivate my actions, so it seems like the effort is no, the point, the intention is good, but sometimes things don't go smoothly. So I was thinking about the paramis that we've been cultivating so far: generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, and now energy. And I was thinking about that how I've studied what the Buddha says about these factors and qualities. I've, tried to learn from other teachers, my colleagues, and I've tried to apply them in my life. And I put together talks on them, but I still get stuck. And what does this stuckness look like for me? Is it like one of the hindrances, like sluggishness, restlessness, desire, or attachment? I link desire and attachment, aversion, another kind of attachment, doubt. So to get a sense of the stuck energy that I called stress, I took some time to see how it felt in my body, and it was heavy, and it was constricting. And then I checked my mind, and my mind said to me, "You're too susceptible to shoulds. It's the tyranny of the should that saps your energy." Some examples that I came up with right away were, "This should be easy. You should be finished by now. You should have started sooner. You should be able to be like this person or do like this person. You should want to do this. You should be enjoying this. You should do this because if you don't, who will?" These are just a few of the should messages that I could think of that I've had from time to time. Then I thought of other ways to frame my actions and my effort, like, "I need to." Well, this doesn't really seem oppressive. Some things in life we need to do. It's a straightforward matter of practical consequences. If we don't, "I need to be home by 6 because that's when we're having dinner. I need to brush my teeth before I go to bed." And then there's want to's. It seems like I can accept having a balance of need to's and want to's in my life. But as soon as I think I should, there's stress. A part of me resists. And that goes for both shoulds and shouldn'ts. And so I was thinking that the shoulds and shouldn'ts in my life constrict energy because there's a resistance. There's just a resistance. Every time I hear that, you know, when that message comes to me, there's a resistance. Now, each of us responds to in different ways to energy issues. I like what Carrie said in one of her talks this month. And for those who are new, Carrie's one of our guiding teachers. She said, "No one knows what is courageous effort for you. Only you know what that looks like." It reminds me of the advice I've heard somewhere, which is, don't compare your insides to someone else's outsides. One person's should is not necessarily another's. A friend of mine says that his psychiatrist told him, "Some people need to loosen up and some people need to tighten up." I think it's worth exploring how the shoulds in our life affect our energy and effort. What are some shoulds? You don't have to say this out loud, but what are some shoulds or shouldn'ts in your life? Do they energize you in a wholesome direction, or do they sap your energy? Do you reluctantly obey the imperative, or do you rebel? Just a question. One thing I discovered when I looked at my energy habit patterns was that my energy is impeded by perfectionism. A lot of people suffer from perfectionism. And in my experience, perfectionism leads to imperfect accomplishments way more often than it approaches perfection. And I think this is because there's too much attachment to the outcome, too much doubt and self-criticism, and too much fear of failure involved in a perfectionistic outlook. Ajahn Suchito, one of our teachers, and he's the author of the book on the paramis that we have on our reading list, suggested reading list, he advises that we focus on the intention, not the goal, when we work with energy. He links the selfing process of becoming to an unwholesome goal-oriented habit pattern that interferes with the wholesome flow of energy. He says the becoming process is a track that keeps moving, flavored with craving, that never arrives at satisfaction. On the contrary, he describes the Buddha's way of managing energy as a natural fruition, not a hurry up to get to the end result. Things that ripen flow into the next in the Buddha's process. And the process is characterized by an attitude of friendliness towards self and others, a pure intention, not personal gain. Similarly, another teacher whose book we have on our reading list, what's it called? The World Could Be Otherwise. He talks about having a vow, which is different from promising to accomplish something so you can accomplish something else. He says a vow is a deep commitment to a path, a way of life, a deep intention. Of course, we have daily needs and wants that require the management of our energy resources, and we don't take vows to accomplish them. But checking how our intention aligns with our deeper values might help when we find our energy blocked. The other thing I found in my research is that more is not always better. Too much effort can deplete us, and too much energy can lead to restlessness, taking us away from our intention and diminishing our energy. We want energy to calm and nourish us and be balanced. For someone trying for perfection, cultivating an attitude of good enough is helpful. As Gail Stark says in her book, another book we have on our reading list, and her book's called A Life of Integrity, she talked about you can practice stopping before a project is completed or before the time you have allotted for it is up. You could make a list, a to-do list with nothing on it. Those things just go, ah, for me. When I practice with these things, I can feel how they make me uncomfortable. And this tells me that I'm breaking into a habit pattern. Less is better for me in these instances, because it enables my energy to calm and nourish me instead of stress and deplete me. It helps me refresh when I really need that refreshment, and it helps me to not feel the stress of overwhelm from too much. Ajahn Suchito talks about the need for boundaries and restraint to conserve energy. He spoke specifically about this in relation to intellectual activity, but I think it also pertains to practice techniques, too much information, or pursuing too many different practices at one time can flood the mind. We need to practice wise discernment by asking the question, is this relevant to my intention and appropriate for this situation? There's a famous sutta called the Simsapa Sutta. The Simsapa is a type of tree that grew at the time at the Buddha's time, the rosewood tree in India. And the Buddha was with a group of monks, and he scooped up a handful of Simsapa leaves, held them in his hand, and he said, these leaves are only a small portion of all the leaves in the forest. And the monks agreed. And he said, like the handful of leaves, the knowledge that I'm sharing with you is only a small portion of all the knowledge I have. But my intention is to liberate you from suffering. And for that purpose, this handful is enough. The Buddha was teaching that what was needed for the gaining of enlightenment, holding back nothing, but refraining from imparting irrelevant information. We can cultivate a middle ground and conserve energy by knowing what to let go of and when to stop. Good enough may not be just right, but I'm learning that it's pretty good for me. Another attitude that has helped me is just do it. When I find myself procrastinating and I ask myself, what am I waiting for? I realize that I'm waiting for a better moment when I'm clear on what I need to do and don't have any doubt that I can do it. When I tell myself, just do it, I give myself permission to learn by trial and error that I can survive any unpleasantness or mistakes. And I found that the relief from getting it done outweighs the dread of not doing it at all or not doing it well. I've talked about how each of us has our own habit patterns and mine may not be yours. So what works for me may not work for you. Some of the investigation strategies are specific to people with my type of problem, like perfectionism, but others are generic. I think an example above of the procrastination, asking the question, what am I waiting for, is an example of a generic question that can be asked by anyone. And asking questions in any investigation is really important. So you can think of some of, I'm sure you have certain questions that you ask that are really helpful for you. And also maybe certain phrases like just do it or good enough that work for you that are not ones that work for me. Maybe we'll share some of those later. Often we have unwholesome habit patterns that are the opposite of a friend or a family member. Opposites attract. Sometimes I think to myself, I'm glad I don't have that problem. But then I realize that I have the opposite problem. Understanding how someone else works with their energy around a situation that's difficult for me has often been helpful for me. The last point I want to make about working with energy applies to working with energy in general. We can look for opportunities to get in touch with an energy flow that sustains itself. It seems to involve finding ways not to resist the state of one's energy. In Tim's Monday night talk on energy, he called it transforming energy. He said, it's when I'm not doing it, but things are being done. Ajahn Suchito says there's a healing faculty to energy that occurs when you stop doing it and instead allow the energy to accumulate and enrich you. That there's a beautiful, stable energy that is associated with being beyond any self-image and that supports letting go of burdens. It follows us through the conditions of aging and illness. We make our boundary fit our condition, and we stay within that limitation. Ajahn Suchito suggests that we find a way of establishing our boundaries and then having confidence within them. So back to Norman Fisher and his doing retreats when he's sick. He said that he practices in the retreat as a sick person would. He says, I try not wasting time wishing for another condition. I just live within the condition I have. He said that joyful effort comes to you from elsewhere, flows through you when you are ready to allow it. Once you stop getting in its way, energy somehow appears. So we need to remember that our energy is one of the awakening factors that is available to all of us. It's a natural element of our body and breath. When we are willing to let go and be completely present, we connect with its power and its natural momentum. It can be effortless and carry us where we want to go. So I'll stop there. And we'll just take a moment to pause and reflect on anything that might have come up worth investigating in your own life in relationship to energy. And this is a time when we can break out groups And I hope you'll stay and join in that. And so I am going to put you in breakout groups. And the prompt for the breakout group, since this is the last one, you might talk about what discoveries you've had about energy this month, your energy, working with it. Maybe you have some noticed some things that replenish your energy and keep it nourished. Maybe you've discovered some joyful effort, and maybe there are still areas that you really feel stuck in, and you can share those. And then in the groups, if you would remember that this is a time to listen, not to give advice, to speak from your own experience, and to make sure everyone has a chance to share and respect everyone's anonymity. Okay, so let's see who's here. 15 people, okay. So I'll put you into breakout groups here. And let's see, so we'll do 4 groups. Okay, there you go. Okay, welcome back, everyone. If you would like to share out with the whole group, this is a time to do that, and you can just unmute yourself. Wondering what you're thoughts about energy on this last day, what you came up with. Judith, can you?
I think mostly we focus on our own thought patterns that get in our way, like rushing, we mentioned. Thinking I want to get this over with, right? Rather than being present with it. I think it's only in the last couple of years that it's even the concept that I can actually be present with things I'm doing has actually began to become somewhat of a reality. Not that I always do it, but you know, because I think I've always thought, well, I have to do this, and I have to do that, I have to do this, and then I've got to do them as fast as I possibly can because I have to get them over with. And then, I don't know what. And it just, and then check, it'll be checked off the list. And one day it came to me, well, I could just see myself there on my deathbed saying, okay, everything's checked off the list, finally, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good, it reminds me of what Ajahn Sucitto was saying about that becoming, you know, you're on this track and it's always out there and you just keep going and it keeps getting further with satisfaction. Yeah, cool. Thank you for sharing that, Judith. And Jerry?
Yeah, Judith, thank you for sharing that. I really relate to that as well. Yeah, the list and checking things off list. And as you were saying that, I thought it was kind of ironic when that happens. I have a lot of energy. There's a lot of energy. Boom, 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 boom. But it's such a, it's an energy driven by aversion. It's like, get rid of, get rid of, get rid of. And so I think there's probably some issue there. What's the energy that is driven by our highest intentions are our greatest values, and you know, I'm curious, you know, how is that fed? And I can get that too, you know. But you know, I don't know. I just wanted to
Yeah, thank you.
Comment on what you just said, Judith. Thank you.
Yeah, I like that. These phrases are really telling, aren't they? Get rid of, get rid of, get rid of. I can identify with that. Okay, Monica, go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you for the talk. I really identified with a lot of the, you know, perfectionism stuff. And so I'm really grateful you were willing to kind of share this part of it. One thing I've noticed in the last month and in the conversation that we had in the breakout group too is that rushing is easy and comes naturally sometimes. And then sometimes procrastination and completely avoiding the things that you need to do comes naturally. I'm more in the procrastination kind of end of the spectrum. But like for walking this middle road is hard, staying in the moment and kind of like, I feel like I'm balancing between those two easy things and doing the hard thing in the middle. And I just kind of wanted to share that and see if, how do you, I don't know, that's a really tough question, but how do you balance between those two things? Just kind of getting rid of things quickly and with the, just in order for them to be checked off a list, but not in a necessarily meaningful way that's going to move them forward, versus being so overwhelmed with the things you have to do that you're not going to even approach them out of fear, maybe, because you expect them to be perfectly done and you can't do everything perfect. And how do you maintain ease in this middle way where you're like doing them with mindfulness and without fear, but then like giving space for yourself? And like, how do you kind of do this thing that seems really hard and like hard to balance? Sorry for the impossible question. But
I think the question, I don't have the answer. I just think the question is really good. So the question is really giving you an intention and a focus and then awareness, so that when you go to the that deep end or that deep end, you're aware of it enough that you could make some movement. You know, I really learned a lot from Carrie this week, this month. Ugh. She talked a lot about doing one thing, you know, just do one thing that might change the habit that's catching you regarding energy. And, you know, we can't do it all, but we can do one thing moving towards that middle way, whether it's from the left side or the right side. We do one thing and it leads us towards, you know, it inclines the mind, it inclines our habits. That's all we can do, but we eventually get, at least we're going in the right direction, right? So asking that question, how do I do this? You know, you'll find little answers because you're asking the question. So I think that's a really good place to start.
Thank you so much, Lauren. I actually really love your answer, both the fact that noticing it is valuable in itself and doing the one thing.
Yeah. Well, thank Carrie for the one thing. Julie, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, thanks for that question, Monica. That's why I raised my hand, because I was thinking about what you said and, you know, recognizing that we get, you know, I get anyway, you know, pulled in those directions as well. And for me anyway, I've just notice that, you know, our habit energy is the energy, or our, you know, habit thoughts or whatever. It's so easy to go down those paths because we don't even think about it. It's just the way we always have gone and always have been. And then I feel like, you know, when you finally start to see it and recognize, wait, maybe this isn't good. It's energy that gets drained. It's energy that's intense, and it's not that nice, steady energy that kind of sustains us, then we have this inclination to want to desire that other energy and to be averse to the energy that we realize, you know, wasn't taking us down the path the way we want to go. And then we get sucked back into, you know, the whole human nature of sort of, you know, aversion and desire. And for me, anyway, the moments when I can just look at all that and go, here's the tension. This is what it is to be human. That's when everything just kind of, you know, it releases, because I realize it's never going to change. It is what it is, and it is what we have as human beings. Then everything just goes, ah. So, you know, gosh, if only I could be living in that, you know, reality all the time. But, you know, that's such as, you know, the struggle of life, I think. So I just wanted to share that. Thanks.
Thank you, Julie. Yeah, because it's not an answer that comes from logic, because it seems like, oh, this is the way it is. It's like a letting go and accepting. When you're thinking, no, I can't accept, you know, this isn't something you accept, but actually it brings you to an energy that is more nourishing, doesn't it? It's interesting. Lillian or Nikhil, whichever.
Yeah, I just want to share, I think, Monica, your question is something that I've also been kind of thinking about a lot recently. And it reminded me of, I think, again, Carrie had shared during one of her Monday talks. I don't remember the exact phrasing of the quote, but it was something along the lines of how Buddha neither delayed nor rushed. And I think that's something I've been trying to, like, work with a lot recently, where for me, I've noticed that I rush a lot, but then I also delay a lot. And the two are often very intertwined, where I think something I've noticed, at least for me, is that a lot of times both of them relate to having the lack of clarity around priority of what I need to be done in the moment. And so I have this delusion of being able to do two things at once. And I want to have both. I want to be able to do all the things that I want to do, even though I can't do all of them. And so that'll lead me to think that, well, okay, I've got like, there's X amount of time and this, I need to be at this appointment at this time, but I want to do this thing before I go there. And so I try to do both, but then I'm delaying the thing I need to do. And then I'm trying to rush through both things to do both. And it causes this kind of like chain of anxiety. And so I've been trying to, I think with rushing, I've been trying to be aware of when I notice rushing, just noticing the rushing, and there's almost a stillness and just being aware of the rushing. And if I don't try to not rush, but just be aware of it, it almost releases the rushing a little bit. And yeah, just for me, I've been trying to work with that. And then, so yeah, I think about, you know, Terry's quote for me, it's just been trying to figure out what do I need to do in this moment and not delay. What do I need to do? And not particularly successful at it, but just kind of, yeah, keep that intention in mind, I guess.
Thank you, Nikhil. I think all the sharing, I appreciate everyone sharing, all of it is bringing up how, what a challenge this energy is for us, that it's, I think our world has us in a bind, energy-wise. But I think the awareness is one of the answers. Because I caught what you said, Nikhil, that almost being aware of your rushing has a little bit of stillness in it. And that was similar to something that you said, Julie. So anyway, some more to reflect on, and I definitely worthy of our finding the causes of suffering. So with that, I just want to close. Thank you, everyone. I want to remind you that Donna is very important. You can give Donna to teachers and to SIMS organization by going to the donation tab on the SIMS website, and that supports the teacher's livelihood and the continuation of SIMS' ability to offer the Dhamma. And in closing, let's just take a moment to offer metta to ourselves and all beings. May we all be safe and well. May we be happy and peaceful. May we live with ease and kindness. Hi, everybody. Thank you for being here. And I'm leaving the Zoom space open if you want to stay and visit and have conversations.